In the great halls of USA Today, we assemble the newsroom's mightiest nerds. Brett Molina.
I'm so sorry for the producer of this podcast.
Kelly Lawler.
I will fight you on it.
Brian Truitt.
Spoiler town!
Together, they form the Mothership. Their mission? To harness their collective encyclopedic knowledge of nerdiness in all its forms. To dissect every trailer, plot twist, and game released for the geekiest of fans. The Mothership, saving the universe from bad comic book adaptations every Friday.
All aboard the Mothership, the Geek Culture Podcast from the USA Today Network. Thanks so much for joining us and happy Friday.
Yay!
I'm Brett Molina. I cover tech. And my scariest animal encounter was a surprise possum in my trash can. That was fun times.
And I'm Brian Truitt, film critic and entertainment writer. And I haven't had a scariest animal encounter, but I have to say, one of the things that freaked me out most was I was moving one time, and somehow a bat got in the grill of my SUV, and it died there, of course. But I didn't find it until a week later. It was just kind of sitting there. And I was like, I ain't touching this. So my dad-in-law had to come out and scoop it out with this shovel. I can't even remember. But it was, I was like, I'm not even looking at this. It freaked me out so bad.
You just reminded me of the time when I was in my old apartment a long time ago, and there was a bat in my apartment. I was sitting on the couch watching TV, and I look over, and there's a bat flying at my head.
Holy
and I do a full-blown, like, Jason Statham roll over the table, roll under to duck this thing, and it was a hot mess. Long story short, the bat got out, and I was fine. The bat was fine, but it was completely nutty. But anyway.
You didn't turn into Batman? You weren't inspired to, like, take on criminals as Batman at that point?
I should have, but, you know. That'll do it for Animal Talk this week. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, but we have more animals to talk about.
This is true. If this is your first time listening to The Mothership, welcome. New episodes come out every Friday, and you can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you like to listen to podcasts. While you're on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could write a quick review. You'll help other people who love nerdy pop culture like us find the show, and we'll give you a special shout-out on the next episode, so it's win-win. You guys have given us some really awesome ideas over the years, of course, and we take your feedback seriously, so we really appreciate it, so always welcome. Don't forget, too, along with leaving a review, you can get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Mothership Pod. You can also email us at mothershippod@usatoday.com. This week, the Mothership has gone to the depths of the sea. It is our own personal Shark Week. It's in honor of The Meg, which is in theaters now. It follows in the footsteps of lots of classic movies starring sharks, which is what we're here to talk about. It's why we love shark flicks so much, what are our favorites, and a whole lot more. First off, let's sink your teeth into this clip.
My God.
It's a megalodon.
He's kidding, right?
That thing's out there. You need to find it and kill it.
Why don't you just put a tracker on it? Did you guys ever watch Shark Week?
That was from The Meg, which stars Jason Statham as an expert diver and naval captain. He's going head-to-head with not just a great white shark, but a megalodon shark. It also stars Rainn Wilson, Dwight Schrute from The Office, Ruby Rose, who happened to be the new Batwoman now in CW, and a host of others. Brian has seen The Meg. We're going to start talking about The Meg. Then we'll talk about shark movies in general. We're going to wrap up totally on a different topic, looking at the Oscars. It's big news with the Oscars, and we figure we've got to cover it regardless. So sharks, then Oscars. So let's start with The Meg, though. Brian, what did you think?
I mean, it's not great. That's the thing about killer shark movies. After you get three deep, it gets pretty chummy. You know, it's pretty bad. It's got everything you want or expect from a movie where Jason Statham punches a prehistoric shark. If that's your jam, you're going to get your jam.
Jason Statham's in this really interesting spot as an action hero because he almost kind of filled a gap between the old guard and then now with newer guard, particularly The Rock and stuff. He's been this weird gap guy, and he's had movies like The Transporter and stuff like that. How did he do in this one?
You mentioned Transporter, and he's been in The Expendables. He's in Fast and the Furious. There's a lot of action stuff he does. But there's not a lot of character work sometimes in some of this stuff. And he gets a lot of interesting character thing. Other than the prehistoric shark, Statham is the best thing about this. He gets to be funnier than usual. He flirts a lot in this movie. Kind of interesting to see him mack on a girl while your shark happening is going on as well.
What are some of the other supporting actors? How are they in this? The one that stood out to me was Rainn Wilson, Dwight Schrute on the water. How is he? How's everybody else?
No one really has an interesting character. It's kind of like 10 Little Indians where it's just like, well, who's going to die now? Rainn Wilson is this genius billionaire tech guy who funds a research expedition. It's off the coast of Shanghai, and they found underneath this cold layer, beyond this they thought was the bottom, and they go under it, and there's this whole other kind of world underneath there. They make an entrance for the Megalodon, who is this 75-foot-long prehistoric shark that no one thought could ever be around anymore. So you have a lot of scientists running around. Ruby Rose is the IT person. Masi Oka from Heroes fame. He's one of the explorer guys. They're all kind of there just to maybe get eaten. There's not a whole lot of kind of stuff for them to do. So again, it's like Jason Statham's cool. Chinese scientist lady's cool. But everybody else is kind of like, you know.
Shark
like,
bait.
Yeah, exactly.
Because sometimes with a lot of these shark movies, it's hit or miss. How was it with the Meg?
The reject from the Jurassic Park movies. He's really big and looks kind of ancient looking. When you have a shark 70 and 90 feet long, like the megalodons were, it's hard to put in the same frame as a person because it's so big. A lot of times when he's swimming around, you just see parts of him because he's so big.
The thing about the Meg that surprised me the most is the rating. It's actually PG-13. I totally thought it was going to be R. And part of me is surprised it's not R. Do you think it was smart of them to stay PG-13, or do you think it would have been better off going R?
They want the Fast and Furious kids to see this, and they want teenagers to go see a shark chomp on people. Adding gore to it wouldn't have made it any better. I get it. It's fine. There's a lot of other movies that have kind of gone that way. It's obviously people getting chomped on, but you don't have to see a lot of the chomping.
Back to Jason Statham. Where does this rank compared to his other stuff?
I enjoy him as an actor. He doesn't have quite the same charisma as The Rock. He's kind of like the Dark Rock, where he's like a little bit more dangerous. Jason Statham's the angry British version of that. Action-wise, it's pretty low. Fast and Furious and Crank, and I love Crank movies. The Transporters franchise are much better than this. But I would rank it higher than Expendables and Mechanic.
Okay.
In the middle of the Stathamography, I guess.
Okay. Before we dig in, bigger picture, Brian, what was it specifically about Jaws that made it as compelling as it is? And still is. It seems like it still holds up now.
It's the perfect shark film. Again, shark films weren't a thing when that premiered. And no one's ever done it better. The sheer terror of beachgoers finding a shark and then freaking out about it, and how real a shark attack could be. Obviously, John Williams' score is freaking phenomenal. And whenever the shark's not around, that John Williams score maintains the sense of dread that it's somewhere around or it's coming at you. The people who are hunting the shark are just as important as the shark is, because it makes you care about the stakes when you care about the people. Brody, the Roy Scheider's cop character, Quint, which is Robert Shaw's Ahab-esque obsessive shark hunter, the nerdy oceanographer Hooper, played by Richard Dreyfuss. You have to care about those people for Jaws to be as successful as it is. The fact of why Jaws is Jaws is because Spielberg interweaves all of that terror that Jaws causes with the lives of these three dudes and, you know, kind of those around them.
Even those camera angles, like the legs like floating around and stuff, was really interesting. And I think that helped make you even more tense, like you knew something was coming. Rewatched it recently, and there's a scene where there are kids with the fake shark fin swimming around, and everyone thinks it's the shark. And it's just, you know, you get this, you're just full of tension for a while, and then you see it's kids, and then you relax, and then all of a sudden the real ones pop up, and it's like you're completely tense again. So I just felt moments like that really are what made it so good. What do you think's the difference between the ones that are great like Jaws, the ones that are in that weird middle, and then the ones that are just really bad?
So you can go on life.usatoday.com right now to go see my top 10 killer shark movies ever. I watch a lot of shark movies to get all that done, because there's a lot of things that I had never seen, like Bait, which is kind of like this weird little Australian horror film, or The Reef, which is, you know, it's another Australian film, but it's kind of more along the lines of like Open Water or The Shallows, where it's just kind of like people just stranded in the middle of the ocean just trying not to get eaten. The thing I found, because they're all kind of the same thing, it's always like somebody gets either stuck on the water or stuck on a boat. Something happens in the middle of the water and they're being circled by a shark, a bunch of sharks. The template's pretty fast and hard. The slow burn aspect of some of these movies just doesn't work. The Shallows, for example, the movie a couple years ago with Blake Lively, the first bit of it is just watching her surf around in a bikini. There is something to be said for that. But you don't go to a killer shark movie, you know, for that. You have to wait a long time to get to the shark stuff. Now, when the shark stuff happens, it is really cool because, you know, she gets a large bite in her leg that she's got to take care of. There's this kind of seagull that's kind of like her best friend on this rock that she's stranded on. There's a lot of cool stuff that The Shallows does, and that's why it kind of ranks number three on my list. But just getting there, the shark. Some of these movies that just like start with the shark in like the first 5 minutes or something. Hats off to you guys, because again, you come to a killer shark movie wanting killer sharks. Don't make people wait for the killer sharks.
I think it comes down to how you present the shark. I think the really good movies present it in a very realistic way. I think that's why Jaws worked so well, because you could envision yourself at the beach and there's that off chance that could happen. I'm sure a lot of people were terrified to go to the beach after watching Jaws.
Well, and they start that movie on the beach.
Yeah, exactly.
A girl skinny dipping and getting pulled under. Boom. You know, you're in it right at the beginning.
Yeah, and it feels plausible. That's why, and that's what makes them good. I think there's that weird middle, the so bad it's good, and I think that's where stuff maybe like a Sharknado shows up, where it's campy and it's ridiculous. And I mean, it's obviously a shark tornado, so I mean, you know. But the point is they lean into it and they commit to that all in. And so that's why it works, because they know it's ridiculous. And so you can kind of follow through. There are some movies that are bad. They try to be serious, but then they also have these absolutely ridiculous ways that it ends, or they fight the shark and stuff like that. That's, I think, where you start to get in that territory of it being just an awful shark movie, not just one that it's bad, but you still like watching it anyway. What's your favorite shark movie all time?
What's Jaws?
Well, not counting Jaws. If
not counting Jaws.
Not counting Jaws. Because it's obvious. Deep Blue Sea.
There's a lot of cheesy action. It's fun. A shark's never going to be that smart. But you do have like one scene where the shark gets a nose on a guy strapped to a gurney and uses him as a batting ram. I appreciate that. As much as Jaws is cool in terms of how realistic it gets with what people would do, you also love something like a Deep Blue Sea that is just kind of like so over the top. It owns its goofiness and revels in it.
As a genre itself, are we done with shark movies?
It is what it is. You know what you're going to get. It doesn't disappoint on that level. Jaws, and then there's like everything else. I will tell you though, watching that many shark movies kind of like in a week, I'm like already kind of an avid indoorsman, but more than ever, I'm just like, no beach. Get me away from water.
Okay, well, speaking of jumping the shark, let's talk about the Oscars.
Which Oscars totally jumped the shark this week. It was a 3-point, hey, we're making some changes. And like two of the changes were pretty good. Starting in 2020, they're moving it up from like late February, early March to early February, which is totally fine because I hate award season kind of really because I have to do a lot with it. And like taking it out by like a month, I'm all about it.
The sooner it's over, the better.
Exactly. Now they want to make it like a tighter, globally friendly 3 hours. Good luck with that. But if they do that, I'm all about that. Here's the big news of it, though. With this coming 91st Oscars, there's going to be a outstanding achievement in popular film. Popular film, in air quotes. So it's kind of like this best blockbuster award. A totally horrendous idea. I'm to the point where it's like hilariously absurd at this point. It's stupid. Hashtag Oscars so stupid. Living up to it. And because it does a disservice to everything. It's to boost ratings. They want more popular films people care about to be part of the show. If Black Panther doesn't get a Best Picture nomination, people will flip out. Could they flip out even more if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination but gets Best Popular Film? It's ridiculous.
It feels like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too, in a way. We want to recognize Avengers and Black Panther, but we're not bold enough to say these films are good enough to be Best Picture. And you always hear buzz around Oscar time about some people in Hollywood who kind of turn their nose at superhero films and think they're just, you know, they're not really worthy of the caliber of film that would be nominated for an Oscar. And so I thought the idea of them having like a ton of nominees for Best Picture is so more films like a Black Panther could get nominated. I don't get why you don't just stick with that formula and nominate a Black Panther. Instead of this, it feels like a cop-out kind of in a way where it's like, you're trying to please everybody, and instead nobody's happy. And the other thing, too, is how are they going to decide what Blockbuster is? Is it box office? Is it the social stuff around it? I mean, is there any hint as to how they're going to determine that?
No, I mean, they sent out a thing that said, like, details are being finalized, which is probably the most vague statement of all time.
Oh, God.
There's no other way. You have to go off of box office. There's no other kind of, like, way to quantify what should make that. What are you going to do? 90-year-old Oscar voter, are they going to understand what social media influence is? Probably not. They expanded the Best Picture nominee list from 5 to, like, at most 10, starting in 2009, because people were up in arms about Dark Knight being critically acclaimed enough to be a Best Picture nominee, and it didn't get it. So then we have 2009, you have, like, things like Avatar. And I was never in the camp of, like, Wonder Woman getting a Best Picture nomination. I did like that film, but I don't think it was, like, worthy of being, you know, in the contention for our Best Picture. I don't think anything, you know, Black Panther is for sure. I don't think, you know, before that, I think it was Dark Knight. I don't think anything between there has really kind of, like, risen to the level of, like, this is an awesome film and should be, like, looked at as one of the best. But you've had things like Mad Max and Avatar and things that have been more genre-friendly films, nerd-friendly films that have gotten in there and should be there. This just makes everything look weird, because now you're saying, okay, Infinity War and Deadpool 2 and Black Panther, those are some of the things that are probably going to end up in this best popular film category. You're saying these things are popular, but, like, whatever makes the best picture thing isn't popular? That's what you're kind of telling those people. It's also creating this kiddie table. It's the participation trophy. That's what essentially this is.
Yes.
And it's just doing a disservice to the film, just because they're worried that they've added a lot of new voters, but I think they're still worried about old white guys not understanding Black Panther, and Black Panther not getting the Best Picture nomination, and them getting a lot of heat for it. But have these voters, trust in your voters. Just don't make a stupid other category just to make sure, or just to kind of, like, to quell the masses. If Black Panther doesn't get a nomination, it probably will. Who knows? But by saying, okay, we're going to have this best popular film category, you're saying, well, it doesn't. You're automatically saying it doesn't deserve to be in a best picture race, even before it is. If Black Panther really is a best picture nominee, let it have the chance. First Man does, or Blindspotting, or Black Klansman, or any of these, or Star Is Born, anything that's gonna, you know, people are talking about as an awards contender, let it just kind of do its thing. Don't create some other category just so it, you know, to give it a participation trophy. I don't get fired up by a lot of things. I let a lot of things just kind of slide, you know, whatever, you know, it's just Hollywood, whatever. And Oscars are kind of like that. Oscars is just kind of like this thing we have to deal with every year. Usually they do the right thing. This is not the right thing. We have Oscar-winning Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad has won an Oscar. I love Suicide Squad. A lot of people don't. You can say Oscar-winning film Suicide Squad because it won a makeup Oscar. This is where they've always lived. Makeup and special effects and things like that. Make a stuntman category, or like a stunt ensemble category, like the SAG Awards do. I think that's fine. Do something that can honor these films and what they do well, rather than having this VMA Most Popular Film Guys Award. That bothers me a lot.
Yeah, I think you're right. It cheapens all the other categories, specifically Best Picture. And I think it cheapens the people that make the popular films. Like you said, it's like a pat on the head.
Star Wars Episode 9 is coming out next year. Star Wars has a Best Picture nomination. The original Star Wars had a Best Picture nomination. Force Awakens, you know, when it came out, there's people that thought it could get in there because it was such this kind of, like, cultural phenomenon. It was fantastic, and it didn't. But, you know, everybody was kind of okay with it. Episode 9 could be kind of, it is the return of the king, honestly, of the Skywalker saga. It is going to be the end of it. It's probably going to be really freaking good. You could have had that win Best Picture and honor, like, all the Star Wars franchise, like you did, you know, kind of the Lord of the Rings. Now, that ain't happening. If this Best Popular Film thing really kind of comes to fruition, it'll win Best Popular Film maybe, you know, in 2020. But it won't be Best Picture. And I think there's something wrong about that. if you know, you can't honor things anymore, it's everything's always going to be this kind of like consolation prize.
Okay, listeners, your turn. Do you plan to see the Meg this weekend? What are your favorite shark movies of all time? What do you think about this change in the Oscars? What is your reaction going to be when the Fast and the Furious inevitably wins an Academy Award? Let us know on Twitter. You can find us at Mothership Pod. You can also tweet at us directly. I'm at Brett Molina 23.
I'm at Brian Truitt.
Don't forget, you can email us also. We're at mothershippod@usatoday.com. That'll do it this week. Thanks so much for listening. Special thanks to our pilot/producer of the Mothership this week, Shannon Green. If you like the podcast and don't want to miss another episode, you can subscribe to the Mothership for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, leave us a rating or a review. It helps other people find the podcast. We're not saying a shark will eat you if you don't leave a review, but...
We're not saying it's not.
We can't guarantee it. Yeah. I'm sorry. Pretty much any app that hosts podcasts, you will find us. So thanks again for joining us. Until then, nerds out.
Later, guys.